Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. It's March 14th, 2023. Another rainy day in Los Angeles. I'm Trey Crowder. That's Mark Agee. What's up, Mark?
What's up, Trey? Got a fun show. We're talking about bank runs today. It's 1929 again there. Mm-hmm. Our Gilded Age speed run continues apace.
I start feeling a little 2080 or whatever, and I'm definitely wanting to get into you with you later, like if how realistic or probable that is. But we'll talk about that later on.
Well, you should stock up on gold, beans, and ammunition.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think we're there yet. So a couple things before we get to the show. Some more fun coming out of the lawsuits against Fox News over their voting lies. One of Tucker Carlson's producers called their audience dumb cousin fucking terrorists.
Yeah. Show me the lie, you know? Like, finally, an honest Fox News producer.
Look, don't throw cousin fuckers in there, all right? Not,
I know. Not all of our people are terrorists.
Right. But it's like man, did you say not the good kind, like the Saudi royal family or something?
Yeah, no, that was my favorite. My favorite part about it was they're talking about like, oh, I don't know if we should cover this, but we probably should because our viewers are really into it or whatever. And then in talking about that, the producer's like, I swear it's like negotiating with terrorists, but the bad kind, like the cousin fucking kind, not the Saudi royalty kind, which I thought was an extra layer of humor to it. It's like, you know, like the Saudis, obviously they're cool, like rich terrorists. Great, obviously everybody knows that, but like these poor shoeless terrorists are gross, like but hey, they're who keeps the lights on, so I guess we got to keep pandering to them. It's some refreshing self-awareness. Like, dude, if you're one of these people, like, I don't know how else to, like, how do you sleep at night? Do you know what I mean? Like, because they are very aware of like exactly what they're doing, and it's like it's a hell of a grift. It makes a whole lot of money, but like, God damn it. Like the true believers are easier for me to understand, I guess, than people like this. Cause it's like, yeah, I don't know, you can't get no other job or anything. Like, do you not hate yourself? It's wild.
Yeah. It's like the bad kind of terrorist. Unlike the sad, unlike the kind that cuts, you know, women's heads off for tweeting about feminism.
Right. But again, though, a lot of money, Mark, you know?
Yeah.
And money, they got those pristine robes, real fancy cars, lions. They put the lions in the cars. You know, it's they got a lot of fun stuff going on over there, along with all the headings and misogyny and everything.
Episode of The Simpsons where the film critic characters like ask the Arnold McBain, the Arnold Schwarzenegger stand in, how do you sleep at night? And he goes, on top of a big pile of money with many beautiful women.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of, yeah. So some fun stuff happening in state legislatures. Today, Oklahoma narrowly defeated a bill that would have banned corporal punishment for special needs children. So you can...
So there's some negatives going on there. So they kept it legal to beat special needs children as needed. Yes. If they act up, you get to paddle out. They're still paddling in Oklahoma and even in special ed. Goddamn, I don't even think in Salina the special ed teacher had a paddle. Most of the teachers had paddles. I don't know if yours did. They'd have the paddles on the wall. They'd like drill holes in the paddle, give it names and shit, wrap duct tape around the fucking handle of it. And like they didn't use it as much, but you know, it was just like an ever-present threat. But you know, I feel like the special ed room was relatively free of corporal punishment, but not in Oklahoma, I guess.
I don't imagine that many teachers will avail themselves of this opportunity. My mom was a special needs teacher, and I could never see her laying a hand on a kid.
Right.
But I would like to, whatever teacher was lobbying against this bill, please don't teach anymore.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I wonder that with a lot of these bills, oftentimes it's like, I don't understand the argument in opposition to it. Is it like big government shit? It's like we don't need a useless law like this. We got better things to spend our time on. Is that how they try to frame it? Because like, what is the argument instead? Is it literally just like, well, hey, you know, they get out of hand. What are you going to do? They're fucking strong. You know, you need something. You got to be able to do something. What are they doing?
One of the guys who was arguing against the bill. Legislator, he quoted a Bible verse, one of those spare the rod verses, and then asked the guy who's an expert who was for the bill, the guy who's against beating special needs. And he said, well, what's the argument for being able to beat regular kids but not special needs kids? And they go, well, they're special needs.
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, I understand in some instances they might not understand that consequence. Like he made the other guy's case for him, but in question format. And anyway, he's still illegal to beat. Anyway, also today, Minnesota is about to pass a law giving kids free breakfast and lunch. And this dipshit Republican said he'd never met anyone in Minnesota who was hungry. And I don't actually disbelieve that a Republican state legislature has never met a poor person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Make a distinction.
Fair enough.
Being hungry.
Also.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
No, never mind. I was going to say, you know, they're a fatter state, right? But I'm thinking of their neighbors, Wisconsin. Some of those apparently.
Dude.
Listen, far be it for me to throw, you know, the South. Hey, we the fattest around. Everybody knows it, but the Midwest can hang with us. Okay, I give them their due credit when it comes to fatness. But I feel like Minnesota is one of the lesser of the fat states in that region. But I don't know. On the other hand, you know what a hot dish is? Minnesota hot dish, tater tot casserole.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cheap and Wisconsin cheese curds hit, man. You take
they hit. Literally, first trip I ever took to Wisconsin. Sat down at we got into town in Madison, sat down at a bar to like eat lunch. And this lady came up and gave us like 3 bags of cheese curds. And I was like, you do this to everybody? Was this just like, you know what I mean? This is the official welcome to Wisconsin. Welcome to Wisconsin. Fatten up. But yeah, I love cheese curds and Wisconsin. Drunk too. They're also very drunk. Just joke when I was up there, like people make fun of Wisconsin for being all fat and drunk. But you go to Wisconsin in fucking February and step out of the airport and you're like, holy shit, I wish I was fat and drunk right now. This would be. Makes a lot more sense if you actually go there.
Yeah. When I was in Wisconsin, I was working at Skyline Comedy Club in Appleton.
Yeah, that's where I was at where that happened. Yeah.
And I remember cheese curds being like $1 and I tried to get broccoli at a grocery store was like $9.50. It's winter in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Also in another one of our laboratories, democracy, going back to our child labor thing, we talked about it for a few episodes lately. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's now, you know, the governor of Arkansas, just signed a bill making it easier to employ children. What it does is, theory, it legalizes kids getting jobs when they're 14 and 15 years old, right? But not younger. But the bill also removes a requirement for people who employ children under 16 to actually check their age. So if no one's checking, how is it illegal? And so, yeah, these people fucking hate kids. They want to be able to beat them, starve them, and enslave them. So, yeah.
I guarantee you they got, like, little league organizations in Arkansas that, like, take the verification of children's ages more seriously than the, you know, Arkansas employment infrastructure is funny.
I never played baseball as a kid because of the scandals coming out of, you know, those kids from other countries, you know, having full beards and playing the Little League World Series.
Yeah, right. Everybody.
Because I went to a school in a different county than I lived in, so I couldn't play Little League sports because, like, I'm not even good at sports. But they were so worried about me being some ringer that I couldn't play Little League with my friends. So, yeah, they do take it more seriously.
It's funny to me to picture you, like, as Little League age, because I just picture, like, you, but, like, you know, child size, which is funny. Like, I picture Mark just looking like Mark then, and then they're like, well, that guy, we can't let that guy in.
Dude, I was born 50.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I literally started going ball when I was 13 years old, so I was like, man, yeah.
Damn, dude, you got even Corey beat. Corey Ryan Forster, senior Georgia correspondent. He started going bald at 19, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that raging testosterone you got. I don't know about him, but you, that's what it is, clearly.
Yeah.
All that man juice coursing through your brain. Fucking just gave you the ultimate man head as early as possible, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Anyway. All right. Anyway, getting into it with us as always is producer Matt. This is Weekly Skews. Before we continue, though, I would like to remind you, of course, a couple items of business. Number one, if you'd like to see me perform live, you can go to treycrowder.com. Got a lot of dates coming up. Next weekend, I'll be in Virginia, Maryland, Philly, and a lot of other places after that. We'll need to update the graphic again before too long, because I'm going back to Appleton. We just mentioned I'm going to Wisconsin in July. A lot of other places between now and then and after that. So go to TreyCrowder.com. Check it out. Get your tickets. Come and see me. Number two, also in Trey Crowder news, I've got a special available on Amazon right now called Damn Boy. It's great. You'll love it. I'm sure of it. So go to Amazon, check it out. Corey Forrester and Drew Morgan also have specials on there. You can get them all together as a package deal, the well-read comedy specials, or you can do it individually. It's up to you. But we hope you'll look into it. And then finally, number three, if you enjoy this program and would like to show your support, you can do so by signing up on Patreon. Go to weeklyskews.com/more. Sign up on there. $5 a month gets you access to full-length bonus episodes. We're doing another one later this week. We're having a lot of fun with it. We got plenty of them already up there in an archive. So you sign up, you get access to a whole bunch of bonus episodes you've never seen before. So you go to weeklyskews.com/more or go on Patreon and look me up. Check out the wares. Sign up on there. Get some more SKUs in your life. Now, as for the show tonight, another massive American bank has collapsed. Before you start weeping uncontrollably, this particular bank worked mostly with the big tech industry. For their part, Fox News wonders, is wokeism to blame? The answer will not surprise you, because it's no, of course not. That's stupid. But one does wonder, what is the cause, and is this a harbinger of things to come? Is 2008 back on the menu? We'll talk about all that a little later. But first, we begin, of course, with the Daily Dumbass. Matt, graphic, please. Tonight's DD, anyone who would be opposed to the Tennessee Lieutenant Governor's brand new Give Head for Weed initiative. You know, if you haven't seen this, I hope you enjoy it. This is Tennessee Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally from my old stomping grounds. In an exclusive interview,
McNally described how he befriended the young man first on Facebook, then on Instagram. Among the posts, this close-up of the young man's backside, McNally responded with three red hearts and three on-fire emojis, along with a comment, "Finn, you can turn a rainy day into rainbows and sunshine."
It's just that, you know, I try to encourage people with posts and try to... you know, help them if I can.
Were you trying to help this young man in some sort of way?
Just basically trying to encourage him.
There was also this post where the man said he was, quote, not a whore, but a whore. One is a slut, the other is a prostitute, adding, I'm the one that gets free weed for giving, then a reference to a sexual act.
And it was liked by Lieutenant Governor McNally.
Yeah. I don't know that, you know, a lot of times on people's posts, you see the name and you see what they've written and you just press the button that says like.
So you didn't read that post?
I don't recall reading the part about the weed. I know that.
Well, what about the prostitute?
I might have read that. In that case,
was it appropriate to? It could have been.
He's like, so, yeah. Yeah, I like, yeah, that part was cool. The whole weed thing, though. Oh, my God.
There's, like, a lot going on here. There's like, a couple of really fascinating elements. Because, like, we could argue about it, but I don't think he's gay. Right.
So, I kind of agree with you. When I first saw it, I definitely thought that. And, you know, as I said to you in our text there, I was like, but I mean, you know, dude, three hearts and three fire emojis. That's pretty strong, you know, expression of support for somebody's butthole picture. You couldn't say butthole, just butt cheeks. But anyway, but like, I kind of agree with you, though, and like reading into it further and hearing what the twink himself, he's a twink, right? That's not offensive.
He self-identifies as a twink.
What the twink himself describes the relationship, I kind of agree. He's like, he's being like a sweet old papaw to this guy, but he's doing it on thirst trap pictures, and it's like, but he's still backing these anti-LGBT laws and stuff, which makes him an asshole either way, but it's like, I don't know. The whole thing is weird and hilarious to me.
That's part of what I find fascinating about this story is, like, first of all, shout out to the Tennessee Holler. They're a progressive blog that broke this story. And they also did one.
Justin Canoe over there at the Tennessee Howlers, been on the show before. We need to have him back on in the near future.
We probably should have got him on for this. I just didn't think about it. My bad, Justin. So they also the ones that have done the drag pictures of Bill Lee. But so before we talk about what's fascinating, let's talk about who Randy McNally is a little bit. He's a pharmacist by trade. He's Catholic, of course. He has a wife and two grown daughters. He's been in General Assembly since 1979, and he became a lieutenant governor in 2017, I believe. So now, reading this interview with the guy whose pictures he was liking, who genuinely seems to like McNally. But yeah. I was thinking about that. The context of all this has been that, like, Tennessee has introduced 26 anti-LGBTQ plus bills this year, the most in the country. Two have already passed, one criminalizing drag, another one targeting gender-affirming medical care for trans youth. The drag bill, of course, got the most attention, but they have a bunch more laws that are pending, and McNally supports all of them. Now, what this appears to be to me is a guy, we're well familiar with the archetype of someone who's publicly nice and then privately a monster.
Absolutely, especially if you're from the South, dude. I mean, they are legion, man. That's like, right. you just hear what these people's like political opinions are, or like in the case of these politicians, the laws they support or whatever. You might read a Facebook post that has to do with nothing but politics, and you think like, this person is a raging lunatic and an asshole who hates everybody or whatever, but like, you just meet them at the grocery store or something, and they're like the most saccharine sweet people you'll ever meet in your life. Like, they're right. So polite and like outwardly kind to pretty much everybody, and then they just like, it's like Jekyll and Hyde shit. It's wild. Mm-hmm.
And so McNally does seem to like the guy, his name is Franklin McClure, the guy's pictures he was liking. And I should get your vibe for this kid's personality. He seems a lot of fun. I love being naked, he said, zooming from the porch of his home in Charlotte, North Carolina, wearing nothing but a pink pair of briefs and a whole lot of jewelry and lip gloss. So that's why I didn't want to wear a shirt for this interview, because that shit is who I am. One day when I'm on the red carpet, I'm going to be naked, girl. All right. So The interviewer was trying to figure out how McNally knew him, and he thinks that he did some community theater in a theater that McNally like attended shows at. So that's how
in Oak Ridge. I was going to say I've done that theater, but it actually might be a different place. But I may have done comedy at that same theater. Wonder if McNally saw that show. Probably not. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so the part is like he talks about like where he lives in a rural South or whatever. He has no queer community, and that's part of why he's online, and that's why he was happy that Randy was giving him attention. Like, I'm so grateful to Randy. It's like a stamp of approval, you know, just to feel seen. Who doesn't want to feel seen? So you have a guy who privately is being supportive of someone who he likes, and publicly is trying to make this guy feel even more fucking alone that made him post the pictures online in the first place, right? And it. McNally also likes some other pictures, and he like I watched some other interviews about gay marriage, and he talked about how like Supreme Court legalized gay marriage, the law of the land. He knows gay couples; he thinks they're very nice. I was like, why can't you take the thing you know, which is that everyone you know who happens to be gay or trans or whatever, you like them, respect them as human beings, and also make laws that reflect that? And the answer is he thinks he'd lose elections, so he's pretending to be an asshole to win elections, and that's something that drove me fucking crazy. And the part of the reason I didn't think like McNally's up to anything shady here is McClure said that he never DM'd him, he never asked him for nudes, he never did anything other than publicly comment, "Your picture of your butt looks great today. Have a great day."
Hold on, wait a minute. I thought he did say that he DM'd him, but nothing salacious. He would just DM him and be like, "Hey, are you doing all right?" or something like that. Just like the same types of comments. One in particular, like the thing I read said that so. McClure, the young man, the naked gentleman, in the interview he gave, he sort of like he defended Randy or whatever. He said, "I'm grateful for him. I have compassion for him. I wish he wouldn't do all that law shit he does, but he's been nice mm-hmm. to me, and I think he's a sweet guy," or whatever. And then Randy DM'd him later that night when the interview came out or whatever. He DM'd him later and was like, "Hey, I appreciate you keeping it real." He said, "I appreciate your truthfulness. If you ever need anything, let me know." So like. You know, I don't know. They seem to have a pretty all right relationship to me, the lieutenant governor and the twink.
Yeah. And also, like, oh, this part resonated with me. He said he was raised in Knoxville in a church-going Republican household that he said didn't always support his sexuality. He came out in 2017, but forced himself to go back in the closet. And he said, I'm so grateful not to be a Christian anymore because of the stress of reading your Bible every day and that whole vibe. Now I'm going to just memorize my Ariana Grande and my Doja Cat songs with the cuss words. I'm so happy, and I can post my butthole. But, like,
a lot of upsides to it. I feel like there's probably some church-going people that still post their buttholes. You know what I mean? You just got to compartmentalize. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Butthole Saturday night, church on Sunday morning. Everybody knows that. That's a key element of Southern living there.
The thing is, like, what he's showing Randy is Christian grace. Right. He's showing forgiveness and open-mindedness.
That's true.
And so, anyway, this is all fucking weird. And so, like, his spokesman said something about, like, how dare you guys try to construe something nefarious and a guy just being supportive of a constituent. I'm like, I'm not actually. I'm not. We're just asking your boss to act in public as nice as he is in private. And then this part depressed me. He said, I'm really, really sorry. Like, he apologized. I'm like, who are you apologizing to? Because it's not Franklin. It's not the guy who you dragged into the public eye who posts like nudes and stuff. Yeah. Although the spotlight really hits for him. He says he's going to move to LA and become the male Doja Cat. So I hope to meet you out here, Franklin. But this is probably embarrassing to his wife. So you apologize to your wife, but who the hell are you apologizing to?
He's apologizing to all the fucking bigots in the base who, you know, he panders to with all the shit that he does publicly. Yeah, and that's that. We say this anytime something like this comes up. It's like, and I know at this point it goes without saying, but like, I wouldn't have a problem with literally any of this if it wasn't for, you know, his policies and the shit that he votes for and helps to institute or whatever. Like, just the lieutenant governor, if the lieutenant governor was a, like, you know, openly progressive in terms of LGBT stuff and like supportive of them and shit like that, I would be like, yeah, well, you know, walking the walk, fucking, you know, support the twinks. It's fine. It wouldn't bother me a bit. It's just because of the, like, you know, seemingly apparent hypocrisy of it. But usually this dude, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. This is kind of a different case because typically you see this type of thing, it does seem to be, I don't know, more salacious or however you want to put it I think this is.
Maybe he has been closeted and self-denying his whole life, and he sees this young guy expressing himself and living out loud, and he's like, I wish I could have been that guy. But either way, the South is such a mysterious place, and I know it doesn't make sense to you guys who aren't from there, but to me, it perfectly tracks this church. Yeah. The guy goes to church every Sunday, runs to offices of Republican, talks like Droopy Dog, and likes butthole pics on the weekends. It's just the way it goes.
A tale is all this time, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. Our next and only honorable mention for Daily Dumbass is bullied kids for not realizing that actually they're the most popular ones. Let's see what Ron DeSantis is telling himself here.
Locker room gets you ready for the press, right? Because your teammates, if they like you a lot, they rip you all the time.
The way you know that people like you is if they're making fun of you.
So you really have concluded the press really likes you because they're always ripping you.
So, like, with your, you know, with your boys and shit, yes, that is true. But it's Ron DeSantis, like, telling himself that about, like, everything else, everybody else's opinion of him and everything is pretty funny to me. I don't think that's what most people are. I don't think most people, like, I know when we go after him on here, it's not because, like, I think he's such a swell guy. He seems like a real bro. Let's rip him apart for an hour. That's not my motivation.
Fox News is doing everything they can to make DeSantis popular, and it's just not working. This is part of an extended interview where him and Brian Kilmeade played catch with they put on baseball gloves in their suits and just played a really clumsy game of catch. DeSantis played college baseball, so it's mostly Kilmeade for not being up a throw. But so it's like, but it's not working. You're still polling it like whatever. And like when Trump's not expressing affection for DeSantis when he calls him like a short, sanctimonious creep, right?
Right.
So, I don't know what that was. Just like, what the fuck, buddy?
Okay. All right. Let's get into it. So, I told you before we started, and I'll just tell everybody else now. So, we're talking about banks, one particular bank that has failed and everything that's going on with that. And I told you before we started, like, I'm very openly not just money dumb, but also pretty, you know, bank dumb, finance dumb. A lot of this stuff, I get into it and I just start like, not my eyes glazing over. I'm just like, I just start to feel lost. So, you have to help me understand this, Mark. I was doing my Patreon videos where I like look at the news while commenting on it live or whatever, and I saw this happening, and I just didn't even know. I was like, okay, so a bank failed. Well, boo-hoo, I don't, you know, whatever. I don't really give a fuck. Well, I guess we'll just see if we bail them out. And then I saw something about Barney Frank, which I think will come up later. And but anyway, yeah. So a bank failed in California, Silicon Valley Bank. It serves the tech industry. I'd never heard of it because I'm not in tech, but it's like the 16th biggest bank in the country. Did business with most of like the big tech brands you've heard of. They said they bragged to have, they did business with like 50% of all venture capital projects in the country at any given time or something like that. So they were a pretty big fucking deal up there in Northern California. And now have fallen.
Well, here's one thing to know is like three regional banks collapsed right, in the last couple of weeks, but only one of them you've heard about because the people involved in this one are the whiniest bunch of fucking psychopaths you've ever heard in your entire goddamn life. Okay. All right. So they have successfully annoyed the federal government into saving their asses. But let's start with what did not cause this. If you watch this clip of Representative James Comer on Fox News real quick.
And then we see now coming out that they were one of the most woke banks in their quest for the ESG type policy and investing. You know, this could be a trend, and there are consequences for bad Democrats.
So these people, the government, anybody adjacent to the government, they love TLAs, three-letter acronyms, right? They love to acronize anything. But so like there's two that are going to come up, right? DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion, and then ESG is environmental,
social and governance. It's like ethical investing.
And so it's like, but it's just, it's funny, like turning them into just these, like, just letter, like the diversity, equity, and inclusion sounds like something that'd be hard to have a problem with, you know, but you can openly shit on it for being woke bullshit that's ruining America's economy or whatever much easier when you, you know, change it into this, scary, nebulous three-letter acronym or whatever, because it's just, it's a wild thing to openly shit on, it seems to me, but they've made an entire sport out of it.
I think everyone sort of knows this, but something that's important to repeat is that, like, companies do stuff like start DEI boards and stuff as a way to keep from doing actually anything meaningful.
Not of course.
So, like, nobody's actually doing anything here.
No, it's just like when they make the fucking the ads and stuff during the Super Bowl or during the pandemic or whatever about, like, how much they care and all this shit. Or it's like, I've always said, if a company comes out and does something that seems like outwardly woke, you can bet that behind the scenes, they've run some analysis that indicates that that is the more profitable tack for them to take in the climate that they operate in. Like, it's not, they don't, none of them give a fuck about any of that. The only thing that matters to them is making money. But like, there's a bunch of studies that show that more diversity makes you more money as a company, you know? So like, there are reasons for them to do this stuff. That's just good old American capitalism at work, but it's demonized because the fucking woke mob and everything else. But yeah, it's all horse shit.
Yeah. So DeSantis, man, the headline up there, DeSantis said that blamed it on DEI stuff too. And he said, that's why he expressed in the guise of saying that's why banks in Florida will be safe, because they don't do woke shit, which we'll see, buddy. Fox went all in on calling this something. They actually use the phrase DEI ESG Marxism. All right. And by the way, I'm sure investing ethically is like theoretically possible. I'm not sure exactly how, you know, in the end of the day, you got to make money or your fund collapses. And even if you're investing in stuff like lithium batteries, lithium's mined from like doing coups in Bolivia. So I'm not sure, like your mileage may vary on that stuff.
But another thing too about okay, lithium batteries are like, I don't know, solar, like green energy and shit. It's not like you can't make money on that stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, if that's going to be like the wave of the future, then getting in on it now is going to make you a shitload of money in the future. So it's like, it's just good business sense. And you'd think that of all people would understand that. But it's, I don't know.
Right. So if you're wondering, like, the part of this that might hold water, even though woke, so it's a meaningless concept at this point. It's not even worth, like, the word means everything and nothing at the same time. But like, so what part of this bank did was they had relationships with more than 1,500 companies that were working on technologies aimed at curbing global warming, like creating solar hydrogen battery storage projects. But yeah, you're right. It's because there's going to be money in it. The guy who figures out climate capture is going to be a fucking trillionaire. But like, so, but this isn't what Fox is even talking about. Like the conservatives, like Wall Street Journal had an editorial yesterday that read, let me read this to you, because this is fucking mind blowing. In a proxy statement, SVB notes that besides 91% of their board being independent and 45% women, they also have one black, one LGBT and two veterans. I'm not saying that, I'm quoting here, I want to make clear I'm not saying this. I'm not saying that 12 white men would have avoided this mess, but the company may have been distracted by diversity demands. Now,
because
I don't even
have of 12, they had 10 or whatever.
Right. Right.
Like instead of like, because it's like this board isn't all white. I'm not saying an all white board would be good, but it seems like maybe their priorities are elsewhere. It's like, why? Because they let one black dude in the room. The most right. woke bank in the country has one black dude on the board.
Yeah. Like,
what the fuck?
And it's not even
that's
like, let
too
me read
much. That's too much. That's too woke. Having one black guy and one gay person or queer that, person, however they identify, like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Talking about how the DEI stuff is spin often, like they, how Wall Street Journal editorial board quoted their webpage talking about their diversity, you know, 93.1% independent, 45% women, one black, one gay person, and two veterans. Here's another way to slice the numbers, the way Vice did it. 10 of their 11 board directors are 10 of their 11 directors are white. All of them are rich. And the youngest is 53 years old. Right. SVB's board, it should be noted, is less diverse than any of the United States' top five banks. So,
okay. So I'm sorry. Sorry if I'm skipping ahead. We can elaborate on it later, but one of them's Barney Frank, right? Isn't he? Isn't that the deal here?
A different board, I think.
Oh, okay. I thought it was this one. Well, either way, whatever.
Yeah. So yeah. Besides the fact that woke doesn't mean anything in this context, SVB failed because they had an undiversified client portfolio, and there was a bank run from some of the most cutthroat anarcho-capitalist people that call themselves self-described psycho-right-winger libertarians. Like that's who caused this, and they did it on purpose. And then they're blaming wokeness. And then, by the way, there is a Republican critique that would be cogent that exists. I don't fully agree with it, but it would go like this. The Biden administration was asleep at the regulatory wheel, which kind of true. We'll get to that. And secondly, dumping a bunch of spending in the economy was bad, which I disagree with, but was inflationary, which is somewhat true. And trying to counter it by raising interest rates led to this, which is like sort of true, but like who gives a fuck? Like who promised them a lifetime gravy train of easy billions? Right.
Right.
So, like,
but so, and I'm sorry if I'm, because like I said, this is all. Like, I'm sort of all over the place with this, so sorry if I'm getting ahead of you here, but you said these anarcho-capitalists caused this, right? And they knew they were doing it. They just all decided to pull their money out of the bank at the same, like a domino effect, right? Like, it's like they somebody pulls their money out and somebody's like, you hear people are pulling their money out of the bank. Well, why is things are bad there. Oh, I better pull my money out. And then they just all do it. And now the bank is fucked, right? But why, what was the like inciting incident or the catalyst? Like what, all right, why did they do that?
All right. So what happened was, let me find it. So SVB was really leveraged in like 10-year treasury backed securities. When the Fed raised interest rates, it made those pay out less and be more expensive. All right. So they were a little more cash poor. Also their clients, because of higher interest rates, were having a harder time borrowing money, so they had to pull a lot of their cash out of the bank. So they were already getting short. Okay. So to make up the difference, the bank announced they were going to sell more shares, right? And so that caused a panic with people thinking the bank was going broke when they actually weren't, but their panic made the bank actually go broke.
Gotcha. All right? Okay. Yeah.
And so
that actually makes sense to me. You're good at this, Mark.
All right. Low and behold. So they got squeezed in both ends, and then they got fucked in the middle. Right. So, but like when Trey's talking about these guys decided together, he's not even remotely exaggerating. It was literally a group chat. Silicon Valley's 200 richest people are in the same group chat, and they all decided at the same time to pull their money out of this bank. And that's where this gets really fucking funny. All right, because the bad guys here. All right. First of all, Greg Becker was the CEO until he got fired last week or forced to resign, I guess. Right before they announced the shortfall, he sold off almost 13,000 shares for about $3.6 million, netting himself a tidy $2.3 million profit. It was like 2 weeks before the bank failure. So the feds are investigating that, right? Chuck Schumer said Congress is investigating that. And this was just funny. The guy they appointed to replace him, his name's Tim Mayopoulos. today asked customers to please return some of their funds into the bank. We're doing great, guys.
Yeah.
Another factor in this was Sam Bankman-Fried and crypto. I couldn't really understand what that, but I guess a lot of the people who were having to pull cash to the bank were having to do so because they were heavily leveraged in crypto and lost a bunch of money in Bankman-Fried shit. But the ringleader here is Peter Thiel. Now, Peter Thiel comes up on this show probably as more than anyone but Trump. All right? He's like the Forrest Gump of chaotic evil. He's fucking everywhere something shitty happening is Peter Thiel standing there. So he was one of the first movers here. And because he's a leader in Silicon Valley, everyone followed suit. And one of these guys, so one guy who was in this fucking group chat, we all decided to do this. He talked about, he posted on Twitter a live TikTok of how the bank run went down. And I think he committed to a crime in the middle of it. Because he said that after they pulled their money and decreased the bank's stock price, he went and scooped some up because he knew it was still a solid investment.
Right.
He fucking shorted this company basically and then profited off destroying it. But luckily go ahead.
Yeah. Well, he ended up getting fucked on that though, right? I mean, I still like he didn't know that what you're saying is still true, but that ended up being worthless at the end of the day, and he fucked himself over, correct?
Right. He lost all his money on that deal because the way the government's doing the bailout, I'm gonna put bailout in air quotes because we can argue about whether or not it's a bailout.
Well, that whole thing. So like Mark's talking about there's this dude who was involved in all this. He's a tech bro, whatever, and he posted this whole like breakdown. This is exactly hour by hour how this all went down. And it's like you read through it and it's like, I don't know. He's just saying like, yeah, everybody was saying, oh, shit's going on. We better get our money out. So I immediately started pulling all of our money out, you know. And then towards the end of it, he's like, it's just kind of a shame this happened, but what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Y'all did it. Like you were, you know, actively participating in all that. And then, yes, in the middle of it, he's like, when the bank bottomed out, I scooped up some of their shares because, hey, that's just what you do. And it's just like, taken for granted that these kind of inherently shady and self-interested moves that people make in the name of profit, you know, it's just like, that's just the philosophy. Like, that's just what you do and that's accepted. And he's like, yeah, any smart businessman would do the same thing. And it's like, it's just kind of a bummer that that's how their brains work. And that's how the system works.
When there's blood in the streets, buy property, buddy. Another VC dude had actually had a good take on this. He's like, I'm looking forward to the tweets from the venture capitalists who sparked this bank run congratulating themselves on their prescience. Like he's saying, like, they said, oh my God, there's going to be a bank run. They did a bank run. They go, haha, I was right. There was a bank run. I was like, you're the fucking one who did it. You decided to do it. And so they weren't just using their platforms. Like they weren't just, didn't just draw their money out. They publicly announced everyone should get their money out. And then they also, and guys are trying to get the feds to do something. They tried to These guys have huge social media funds among particular types of followings among particular types of people. They were trying to spark other runs in other community banks to try to make the Fed act, make the FDIC act. Sorry. So like they were trying to manifest a worldwide global economic collapse, so the federal government would step in and save their investments.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most evil fucking things I've ever seen in my entire life. It's incredibly maddening. And like they were so shameless about it. They spent all weekend begging on Twitter for the federal government to do something. And like Jason Kalanakis, who's like a big time investor, was like, you should, in all caps, you should absolutely be terrified right now. That is the proper reaction to bank running contagion. President and Secretary Yellen must get on TV tomorrow and guarantee all deposits up to $10 million or this will spiral into chaos. So these idiots had all their money in checking accounts. They're only insured up to $250,000.
And they went by the FDIC, you mean?
Yeah. So
okay, because I was about to say, it's like, I got to say, like, I thought the whole point of the FDIC was to protect, like, you know, if like, because it started because all the bank robberies, right? So a bank would get robbed and now some fucking farmer has no more money because the bank's like, yeah, Jesse James and the boys took it. What are you going to do? And the FDIC was formed to like keep that from happening. So like the bank gets fucked, but the person gets their money back, right? Which like that, I mean, I'm all for that, but like,
right.
It shouldn't be exploited by these people, right? So there's a limit on how much it's insured for or whatever. Because I don't want to get into like, you know, I don't know. I think generally speaking, the idea of the FDIC and how it's supposed to work is probably a good thing. Because, you know, fucking one of my banks fucking goes under.
Oh, I don't have any problem with, I actually like the way they did this bailout, where like the investors and shareholders are wiped out, but the account holders are made whole. That actually makes
right.
sense to yes. me. I'm not against this okay. as a policy.
Yes, just, that's the way it should be right there, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah, if but you also, make an investment as a shareholder in some big entity like a bank or whatever, and it fucking goes under, you shouldn't just get your, it's like, well, that isn't fair. It wasn't supposed to right. go under. It was supposed to be good. And I was supposed to make a bunch of money, but it was bad. And now I have no money. Somebody needs to give me all that money. It's like, no, fuck, you play the game, you know. You fucking buy the ticket, take the ride or whatever. But yeah, but like just money in people's accounts and whatnot. Uh-huh.
But you and I
protected but, or whatever.
But you and I are left wing, right? What you're summing up is sort of a left wing idea. Well, the world shouldn't be so random and cruel. These guys love it random and cruel.
Yeah.
Like they literally advocate for the world to be more random and cruel. And then the whole premise upon their extreme form of capitalism is that you make a bad bet, you get wiped out. I remember a few years ago, Floyd Mayweather Instagrammed a picture of an ATM receipt, and he had $80 million in his fucking personal checking account. And I was like, that's stupid. This guy's going to get wiped out if the bank goes under. And like, I was like, who else could be that dumb? And you have these guys had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash just sitting in checking accounts. That's the kind of mistake that's supposed to fucking wipe you out in their world.
Right.
Right? These are the same people that charge us late banking fees for missing a payment. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest assholes here is David Sachs, who's a big-time Silicon Valley dude. He spends his whole life tweeting that tech could fix the world if government just got out of the way. And this happened. When I say cried, I mean cried all weekend on Twitter. I mean, like, then today he tweeted denying he was ever a libertarian when he's called himself a libertarian for a decade. But this isn't my observation. Someone else made this joke, but there's no atheists in foxholes, no libertarians in a bank run. But like, all this is just like, this is all so stupid. And one of the reasons this was really concerning to me while I was paying close attention to it is my employer, who I don't want to name, their employer is one of these tech companies that had hundreds of millions of dollars sitting on these checking accounts. I was like, am I going to lose my job and get evicted because these motherfuckers got took by a bank that was stupid?
Right.
You know, like none of this makes any sense, but like we're all subject to like the vagaries of random shit that happens in the world that costs us our entire life savings and shit. And they're not.
Right. Because they're too big to fail or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be protected. I'm saying, why aren't we all this fucking protected? And that's the part that drives me crazy. But the political fight of this is going to be real stupid. Because like, okay, so Dodd-Frank would have stopped this, because part of what happened here is this bank was only worth $50 billion. It had $50 billion in assets a couple of years ago. Dodd-Frank used to regulate banks that are $50 billion differently than banks banks bigger than that. Dodd-Frank raised that cap to $250 billion, so they immediately grew to $250 billion. They were intensely trying to be on the less regulated side. Dodd-Frank was put into place after the 2008 financial collapse. Obama signed it into law, I think, 2010. All right. Here's Trump taking credit for loosening these regulations in 2018.
We've done. But we've kept yet another promise as I signed the Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act into law. It's a big deal. It's a big deal for our country. This is truly a great day for America and a great day for American workers and small businesses all throughout the nation.
Yeah.
The legislation I'm signing today rolls back the crippling Dodd-Frank regulation.
It was a victory for workers. Do you remember the day we celebrated when Dodd-Frank fell, Dre?
Right.
We all fucking raised the beer. So Dodd-Frank is one of the career legislative achievements for Barney Frank, who was a congressman from Massachusetts, who was the guy that Trump used to make fun of his nipples.
Yeah.
Remember that? So he's a Democrat from Massachusetts. So, he now sits on the board of Signature Bank, which just collapsed probably because of the removal of Dodd-Frank. He had advocated for undoing his own bill after he got on the bank board.
So right.
The reporter called him up and asked how he felt about it, and he declined comment.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like his name was on the bill to regulate banks, and then he got on a bank board, and he's like, we should stop regulating banks, and now his bank has collapsed. It's another thing. Like right. I know I saw in here somewhere, like DeSantis, like they're gonna blame Biden. This happened on Biden's watch. You see what happens when Biden's in control? This happens, right? And it's like maybe they are they asleep at the wheel? They should be doing more or whatever, I guess. But I don't want to hear it from these motherfuckers because right. like, they want zero regulations at all. Like I saw the one of the interviews with DeSantis where he's saying that he's like, you know, we got all these crazy big government regulations, but yet this still happens. And it's like, well, what is your argument? Because you want to get rid of all of them. Are you arguing right. that this wouldn't happen if there were none? Like, the argument should be we need to actually enforce the fucking things, right? But you want to get rid of all of them, but still it's just talking out both sides of your mouth and trying to have it both ways. And that's how they're going to play the whole thing. Cause that's how they play everything.
Yeah. I mean, regulations, like we've tried a lot pure conservative economics a bunch of times. This is what happens. This is the fault of like regulations. This is the, I mean, it might be the fault of the design of regulations. Like you can have like loopholes and accidents, but like, unrestrained capitalism looks like 1929 where people were jumping out of building out of windows because they lost all their money. Like, and that's back when you could have child slaves and make people eat asbestos for lunch for cheaper. And right. it's still, yeah. So, but yeah, but this isn't like, this is part of the thing is like, so Republicans get in the office, they remove all regulations. Then Democrats get in office and maybe put like a few of them back. There's like a ratcheting effect where things get more and more out of control. And like, to Dem's end of this, it's not just Barney Frank lobbying to undo his own best bill. It's like Biden's been president for 2.5 years and they haven't done anything to try to reinstate Dodd-Frank. Mm-hmm. And like also the part, as far as being asleep at the regulatory wheel, I brought it up earlier. But so beginning of last week, the chair of the FDIC, his name's Martin Grunberg. He gave a speech warning that this was about to happen, but they didn't seize the bank till after it happened on Friday. Like if this had been in 2008, when Obama was first in there, they took over fucking banks immediately. They took over a ton of banks. Now, I know Biden's afraid to be, if they'd taken over the bank, Biden would have been called a communist by these same assholes who are begging him for a bailout. But like, so what? I'm not laying this at Biden's feet. I'm laying this at like, this is the whole party's entrenched ideology to not really try that hard to do too much. Although that should be seen as radical.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, even our like left wing party in this country is still like super capitalistic and pro big business at the end of the day, like way more than I would like to see. You know what I mean? Like they're, but yeah. like, but still it's not like the fucking, not the Republicans who would, you know, right. strip all of the regulations away. But yeah, I mean, it should, I'd tighten the belt way, way more if it was up to me, but nobody wants to do that in charge, but apparently.
I'm just so sick of living in this cycle where we have a huge economic downturn because of banking shit every 8 or 9 years. And I don't know if this is going to expand, but like today Moody's did downgrade all of our 6 biggest banks, the credit rating. So I don't know what that means or whether it's going to have any effect, but like, they're not optimistic. And like, this is just like, you got to use this, Joe Biden, if you're watching, you got to use this crisis to rejigger the system or it's going to happen again, again, and again, and again, again. This is like this is like the fifth one of these I've lived through. I'm not that fucking old. And like, this is getting so repetitive and stupid. So you're going to hear a lot of talk about moral hazards and all this. So just so everyone knows what it has, it has nothing to do with morality. It's like, if you don't let people experience the consequences of their actions, they're more likely to take bigger risks. Like if you bail out this bank, if they'd actually made the shareholders whole, the bank would have had no incentive to not take bigger, riskier bets. All right.
Right.
Which is probably true. So it's good that they're not getting their, their investment back. Or that fucking asshole who caused the bank run, then bought shares in the bank, would have made a hefty sum off of it. But it's worth noting that all these same fucking ghouls who got bailed out were very public in their opposition to student loan forgiveness because of, you call it, moral hazards. All right. Mm-hmm. And so like, let me talk about this. Larry Summers, who worked as an economist at both the Clinton and Obama administrations, was tweeting up a storm all weekend, I'm quoting here, advocating for a complete bailout of Silicon Valley Bank. And he said, Summers doesn't want to hear any moral hazard lectures, as he puts it, about the risks. But a couple months ago, former Harvard University president and Treasury Secretary Larry Summers took to Twitter Monday to say that student debt relief could have negative effects on inflation and lead to moral hazards. The inflation part of this is fucking maddening because the Fed, this is what the Fed wanted to happen. They wanted interest rates to directly lead to there being less money in the economy. And then they did it and they immediately had to bail out this bank because they had the potential to make a bunch of people immediately unemployed, but these are the wrong people. This wasn't the people they wanted to make unemployed. So this is like,
right.
It's just that they got to find another fucking target. It's just like, matter. We did our whole episode last week talking about they're about to get rid of SNAP, the dial back SNAP benefits, and all these other federal welfare programs. But like, they're willing to spend to help this group of people. Again, this isn't about them not, me not wanting them to be protected, made whole. It's like, what about the fucking rest of us? Right. Jesus Christ. So you're going to have a big fight. You're going to see a bunch of fighting about whether or not this is a bailout. And part of that, because of the psychology of this stuff. And I wanted to talk about this because I read some interesting social science research about student loan forgiveness the other day. So this woman is the headline. You just head up, Matt. You can put it back up if you want. This article in Slate. This woman talked about something called the public goods game. Basically, it's like people get really upset about being played for a sucker. All right. And the way they demonstrated this in this game is like, it's just sort of like a game theory type thing. We have two people who can't see each other. They can pass a note back and forth. And the first person has $10 and they have to like make the person an offer for how much they get. And if the person accepts it, they both get to keep the amount of their chunk of that $10. If the person rejects it, neither of them get anything. And the basic rule of thumb is if you say you keep six and they get four, most people will take that deal. This is four free dollars, mind you. They're getting for nothing but writing on a piece of paper. But if you push it to 7-3, they're going to say, fuck you, neither of us get anything.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's a really, those are really
everybody involved thing. Knows all the rules of the game, right. And they know the other person has $10.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I probably would also do that.
if I knew all
that, some motherfucker was like, I'll give you three of them. I'd be like, you know what? Fuck that.
Right.
I'll take you down. That's all I'm worth. Well, how about we both get nothing? Are you happy now, motherfucker?
Yeah.
Like, I definitely would be one of those subjects
anyway, game. When Biden, I don't know if it'd been a platform for it to matter, but when Biden talks about student loan forgiveness, he should probably talk in terms of what it would do for everyone as opposed to helping these particular group of people, because people who aren't getting it get really mad. They feel like they're subsidizing somebody else getting something for free. But yeah, it was like, I remember in college, I took this like morality and philosophy class. I forget the name of the class, doesn't matter. But the whole like midterm exam was the class had to get together and negotiate. If we all agreed to collaborate, we would all get B pluses, right? But if two people tricked the class into agreeing to cooperate and they didn't cooperate, they would get A pluses and we would get B minuses. So on down, unless everyone tried to be selfish, and then we'd all fail, right? So yeah. I absolutely got taken for a sucker. We all agreed to cooperate, and three people were assholes, and they got A's. And it was like, I got like a C plus or B minus or whatever. And it was like a very good lesson in there. But the lesson I took away from it was like, I'm just going to try to do the right thing anyway, because somebody's always going to be assholes with get over on you. Whatever.
Well, for the record, also, if I was the one giving the money, if I was the one deciding the chunk of the $10, I would do 5 and 5 every time.
Right. That's what me I too. I would guarantee to get five.
Like, okay, I'll five. You get five, I get five. That's the fairest thing. Like, just so everybody knows, which I think is why if somebody tried to give me two or three, I'd be like, what the fuck, bro? Right. But I just want to say, because I would do that, but when it comes to the people that are like, I had to pay my student loans, now they don't get to, that ain't right. Like, I still think that's bullshit, and
right,
because I did that. I had student loans, I paid them off. I still want people to have their student loans forgiven. So
same here,
just covering all my bases here, I guess.
But because what kind of world is it where like somebody got a master's degree to be a social worker can't get their student loan debt and is forgiven, but some guy who's trying to make an app to make a drone that walks dogs loses $50 million because he mismanages money and he gets made whole? Right. Like, it doesn't make any sort of sense to me. But back to the moral hazards thing is here is like part of the logic of these dudes, why they get to be super wealthy is because they've taken big risks. Right. and they didn't fuck up. But the people who lost their money here, I'm talking about the depositors, did fuck up because this bank made them sign an exclusive contract to only bank with them so they couldn't diversify their accounts. That is a huge business fuck up. The market's just punishing them for being stupid. And this is what drives me crazy about like all the like teeth gnashing about like firms going under who didn't do anything wrong. That happens every day. Like try to talk to somebody who tried to open a restaurant, right?
Right.
I feel bad for people that work at Uber who just did coding and were going to lose their job if they're like in their futures if the company let them all let them go and they didn't do anything except work for a company that had their money in a bank. But like, what about the people that paid six figures for a taxi medallion in like 2008 in New York? Not knowing that Uber was coming. They didn't do anything wrong. They just got fucked.
Yeah.
And so where's their safety net? Uber's getting bailed out, but not all the people and that's one of the things, like, these guys seem to be utterly shocked that no one felt sympathy for them. It's like, whose industries did you think you were disrupting? You know, like, right. We've ranted a lot about capitalism, just to wrap this up real quick. And it's like, it's not because I think that, like, some other economic system would be perfect. I ranted about capitalism because that's the system we live under. Every system's going to have, like, systems crush individuals. It's what they do. The reason you have, like, an overseeing authority is to try to ameliorate the consequences of that. Like, if a zebra breaks his leg, it's not his fault, but he's still going to get eaten by the lion. Evolution's not fair, but we can make the world more fair.
Right. Exactly. And also, it's like you said, all the people that, like, want it to be, like you said, they loved it. They espouse all this all the time. Like, that's the beauty of the system, is that it is, you know, unfair, and you got to know how to play the rules. And, you know, if you get burned, fuck you. And they like all talk all that game, but then when it happens to them, they're fucking hat in hand. Where's the government now? Bullshit. It's just like with McNally earlier in the, you know, none of it would be a problem if it wasn't for the hypocrisy. If they actually, like, were principled in their sociopathy, however, then it might be a different story. But they're just not. It's all, you know, for thee, not for me shit in this country. Mm-hmm. And that's what pisses me off. But Matt, if you want to throw up a couple comments up there before we get out of here. But
My wife has a friend, tried to be too specific here, but she opened a fitness studio, took out a bunch of business loans to do it, and her grand opening happened to be February of 2020.
Yeah, I know. When you said that about restaurants earlier, I almost brought up COVID. I was like, you know how many people got fucked so hard, irreparably hard by COVID? And it's just like, you know, I mean, that just sucks. Nobody knew that shit was going to happen.
Remember Tiger King when the tiger bites the employee's leg off, and Joe's like, I'll never financially recover.
Never going to financially recover from this. Yeah. Edge fan says opening a small business is the biggest risk you can take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we celebrate that in this country. And I'm not saying we should. I mean, we should, you know, like real businesses. I don't know about the fucking drone dog walking apps and stuff, but that's the story here. It's all those people, you know. It's like everything is like vaporware and shit now. Like, things just aren't real anymore, you know what I mean? Like, I went to a cobbler last week, you know what I'm saying, and that dude, he's got like a craft and he does a good job and it's a service and all that, and it's like, that's how everything used to be. But now so much stuff is like just money for, like, what even is it? You know what I mean? People have millions and millions of dollars, and I have no idea for what or how or what they do for the world or any of that shit. You know, like,
before we read this comment, let me, like, so one of these people ran one of these startups is a woman, and she was like, tell her personal tale and do feel sorry for her, because, like, she apparently put all she did, all she had, into this company. And she's like, my husband works at Joe, we're not wealthy. I drive a Honda Odyssey. I got two kids in public school. I'm like, yeah, I don't want you to suffer, lady. I get that. But someone looked up what her company does. It's an app that makes you bespoke to-do lists using AI for $6 a month. $12 day planner.
Come on, dog. Really? Sorry. I feel bad for her too. But, like, I mean, that's such a perfect example of exactly what I'm talking about. Diane L. Burnt says, it's just like cancel culture. They can ban books and all that, and that's okay, but try to take something away from them, and all of a sudden they're getting canceled. Yeah. I mean,
no one's even trying to take anything. It's like, hey, man, you shouldn't say that. That's mean. It's like, I'm being put in prison.
Yeah. And then they just keep saying it all anyway and everything. Yeah. And it's like, you know, yeah. Cancel culture is bullshit. So you guys know, if you're planning any trips to Southern California soon, be prepared for it to be green, which is very weird. It's green right now, so make a wish.
You watch that. I hope an air wall. I'm the perverse thing about this is probably make wildfire season worse because there'll be more roughage to dry.
Oh, so shit. I didn't even think about that. God damn it, Mark. Anyway, all right. Oh, thank you. Yes, Michelle, getting in just under the wire. Michelle Brierton says, hit the like button. Yeah, please make sure and hit the like button. Tell your friends, write and review, share, subscribe to the channel. All that good internet stuff. We sure would appreciate it. So, yeah, you go to treycrowder.com. My there's a link for my special in there, and there's a link for all the tickets to all the shows I'm doing in the near future. TreyCrowder.com, my name. You get it. Then you also can go to Patreon and search for my name, or you can go to weeklyskews.com/more. Sign up on the Patreon and get a bunch of bonus SKUs episodes. Like I said, you sign up now, you get access to the archive. I don't even know how many we've done, but it's a lot, and we're doing another one this week. So keeping that going, you support the show and get some more SKUs in the process. We'd appreciate it. But the main thing, keep coming back every SKUs day. You will, and we will too. We'll see y'all in 7 days. See you. Love you. Bye.